Brian Lehrer on WNYC and sex trafficking in the United States. My next guest wants you to look to the mall or the corner where young adolescents with extreme emotional hunger are hanging out and easily misled into a life of prostitution. That's the story that Holly Austin Smith can tell from her own experience, and she's now an activist for preventing the same fate for others. Her new book is Walking Prey, How America's Youth Are Vulnerable to Sex Slavery, and she joins me now. Welcome to WNYC, Holly Austin Smith.
Hi, Brian. Thanks so much for having me and for covering this topic.
And I see you grew up not that far from here, South Jersey, in our listening area. So what do you think made you Walking Prey, as you put it in your book's title?
Well, I think that there were a number of factors happening with me in middle school, some of which were I was really struggling with the transition between middle school and high school. I was starting to lose my friends, and I was struggling with finding new friends and just being okay with that loss. I was struggling with depression, anger, wasn't getting along with my parents. I mean, I was like a lot of other teenagers, but perhaps for me it was a little more, there was a little more going on because I was struggling so much and dealing with all those emotions.
There's a difference between someone who turns to prostitution and someone who would say that they were a victim of sex trafficking, correct?
Not necessarily when it comes to children. It's recognized anyone under the age of 18 who was lured into prostitution by someone, that is a form of sex trafficking with or without force, fraud, or coercion. Whereas for adults, there needs to be an element of force, fraud, or coercion to be recognized as sex trafficking under the government, the federal legislation.
So who did what to lure you and how?
I met a man at the local mall, and we exchanged phone numbers. It was really quick. He didn't spend a lot of time talking to me in the mall, and I realized that that was probably because he didn't want to draw attention to the fact that he was talking to a young girl. So we talked on the phone, and so this happened in 1992, and back then I had a teen line, and I hung out in my bedroom, and I was always on the phone, so my parents didn't take much notice. And we talked on the phone for about 2 weeks, and he said things like he could help me become like a rock star. He could introduce me to famous people. He told me I was pretty enough to be a model. He just said things that made me feel good about myself and wanted to know him more. And so by the time he started talking about running away and having this new glamorous life, it sounded like a good idea. So I packed my bag. I ran away. I met him at a different mall, and he took me to a motel room, and he left me with this woman who would get me ready, and I thought I was getting ready to go to a club in Atlantic City. And then when he returned, he made it clear that he intended for me to prostitute, and I was forced into prostitution almost immediately in Atlantic City.
How did they force you?
You know, at 14, he didn't have to use any form of violence against me necessarily because I was easily intimidated. That's just what my personality was like, and I think that they figured that out after 2 weeks being on the phone with me. So he just said, he started to say things like, this is your new name, this is your new birth date, you need to take take $200 an hour, you need to keep working until you make $500 an hour. And it just became clear to me that they were talking about prostitution. And he slammed punched his fist into his open palm and told me not to speak to the police. And that was all the intimidation that I needed to listen to him.
How did you get out of it, and after how long?
Luckily for me, I was only under their control for about 36 hours, and then I was spotted by a police officer on the street in Atlantic City, and I was arrested, and I was treated like a criminal. So this is the reason why I'm so passionate about speaking to law enforcement. I consult for Amber Alert and Fox Valley Technical College for the Amber Alert program, and I speak to law enforcement across the country to help them understand how a child can go from being a middle school student to being on the streets in Atlantic City or any other city in America involved in prostitution, and how that child is a victim, not a criminal.
My guest is Holly Austin Smith, author of the new book, Walking Prey, How America's Youth Are Vulnerable to Sex Slavery. And listeners, do you have a question about vulnerabilities to or recovery from teen sexual exploitation? Call us at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We have a comment from a listener on our comments page, Sheldon from Brooklyn, who says, sex trafficking, unfortunately, will never totally go away. However, if sex work was legalized, regulated, and taxed, trafficking would be reduced. How much do you agree with that statement?
I get that question pretty often, and I really don't have an opinion on that, only because I haven't spent a lot of time researching that topic and researching what methods have been successful in other countries or in the past. I know Sweden has completely abolished prostitution in the sense that johns and traffickers are arrested, but anyone offering commercial sex acts is offered services as opposed to being arrested. But I think Canada just recently passed legislation to legalize prostitution, and something is happening in Germany as well. So I'm hoping that in my next book I can tackle that debate and offer as much research as I can get my hands on, and other people's opinions on both sides.
Natalie,
but when it comes to children, walking prey is all about what makes a child vulnerable to falling into prostitution or falling prey to traffickers. So I don't really address whether or not prostitution should be legalized.
And you list just being a child as the prime vulnerability, and also list other risk factors, including poverty, which makes sense, and proximity, meaning the sex trade is going strong and there are men around, like at a lot of truck stops, things like that.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, I have one chapter dedicated to community risk factors, another chapter dedicated to predisposing risk factors for the child, him or herself, or his or her family.
Natalie in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Natalie.
Hello, I'm particularly interested in this, and I have a question. I'd like to know if once you were picked up, if the police went after your traffickers, if you reported it and they were arrested too.
When I was initially picked up, I did not self-identify as a victim, but over the course of a few hours, they did recognize that I was manipulated or exploited in some way and that someone must be behind this. So in the end, detectives did get involved, and they took my testimony, and they eventually did track down all three people who were involved in my case. One was the person that was talking to me on the phone. I didn't find out for about 15 years until I went and collected my police files that the person I was talking to on the phone was a completely different person than the man I met at the mall. But when they found him, when they arrested him, there was there was nothing to charge him with. He hadn't broken a law in 1992, whereas today he would be liable under the TVPA. The main trafficker was arrested, and about a year later, and he was found, I think, in Memphis, Tennessee, and he served 364 days in jail.
Stuart in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. So as a parent of a young girl, this is more or less one of my worst fears, and I wonder whether you have advice to parents, how to bring this up, how to give children the tools to avoid this kind of horror.
Yes, I definitely do. So that's my main purpose for writing Walking Prey, is to offer as much advice to parents, law enforcement, service providers as possible. And I think that alongside with raising awareness about child sex trafficking in schools, it really education and prevention efforts really need to dig a little deeper and go after those predisposing factors that make a child more susceptible to any sort of exploitation. And the one that I highlight the most in Walking Prey is a need for media literacy in schools and conversations with parents and mentors to help kids navigate a society that really values the sexualization of and objectification of women in pop culture. Because I think these messages constantly being filtered to young girls tells them that what's valuable about them is their sex appeal and their beauty and their popularity. And those factors are making them more susceptible to being victims.
And you include resources in the back of the book for parents like Stuart and teens and teachers and law enforcement. And looking at it, I think they all start with some version of become media literate. What do you see as the media's role in this?
Well, I think that kids are being inundated with negative messages telling them that they have to have money in order to be important and in order to be valued. They have to be in a relationship. They have to have a certain definition of beauty, and they have to have sex appeal, especially for the girls. And all these messages without anybody stepping in to help a child understand that perhaps this is not what is most valuable or valued by society. They're just taking them in at face value. And it's a part of my personal story. I think that this is a predisposing factor that's not being mentioned enough, or a community risk factor that's not being mentioned enough in the dialogue on child sex trafficking.
Tom and Seabright, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tom. Mm-hmm.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'd like to ask your guest, she mentioned that she was trafficked in Atlantic City, which is, you know, the home for casinos. And I was wondering if she thought that there should be more legal pressure or recognition of the role that these casinos play, because they're basically a brothel. I think, you know, they know that people come there. That's why prostitutes are put on the street in that area, or in the hotel lobbies, or in the gaming areas. And I wonder if there's enough attention being put on that, and maybe if there's more legal focus on the casino's responsibilities, it might be cut down a bit.
It's a great and such a timely question, with Atlantic City already in our region, and with the intent to expand casino gaming in New York State. What do you think, Holly?
That is a great question. No one's ever asked me that before.
No one's ever asked you that before?
No one specifically ever asked about the casino hotels. And it was mostly casino hotels that I was trafficked through. And I don't think that, I can't say for sure, but I really don't think that they're doing enough to tackle sex trafficking in their area. But what I could recommend is there's an organization, and I think that the location is in New York City. It's called Ending Child Prostitution and Trafficking, ECPAT USA. And they go around and they train hotels on how to identify sex trafficking and how to respond to it. And they have something called the code, where hotels can, or anyone in the tourism industry, can sign on to the code and say, I'm going to be a participant against sex trafficking, child sex trafficking, and they get on board and train their employees. So I do think that the casino hotels need to be actively involved with that.
Do you think social media or certain kinds of uses of social media make kids vulnerable?
Definitely. In 1992, the only times I really crossed paths with a stranger was maybe on my way back and forth to the bus stop, walking around town, going to the mall, and going to the boardwalk. But now, every time a kid turns on his cell phone, there's a chance that he can cross paths with a predator online.
One more call. Ken in Westchester, following up on the legalization comment, I think. Ken, you're on the air. Hi.
Thank you. I work with Equality Now. It's a human rights organization. And when New York State passed its trafficking law, my job was training on the New York law. And I really have to say this legalization argument is a myth. Anywhere that it's been applied, trafficking has actually increased. So You look at the classic case of the Netherlands, which has seen a huge increase in child trafficking, so much so that the Netherlands is now thinking of going to the Swedish model, which Holly mentioned earlier. And you know, it's not just the Netherlands. If you look at Australia, New Zealand, Germany, where if at least decriminalized. And the problem is, if you legalize it, you don't have law enforcement looking at prostitution, which is where everybody in sex trafficking winds up. And if they're not looking at prostitution, they're never going to find sex trafficking.
Ken, thank you very much for that comment. And we're almost out of time, but Holly, what do you think? Is he onto something, or does that distract from the problem?
No, I think that it's a debate that needs to be considered, and so I'm hoping to really tackle that in my next book, and I think it's important to hear from both sides of the argument. So I'm hoping that I can give voice to everyone.
And so getting arrested was just the start of getting you out. Now you've got, you know, a successful life, it sounds like, and, you know, you managed to break out of that horrible situation and thrive, which maybe not everybody does. So what do you think are the keys to that?
Oh, I have a lot of recommendations for those working with children in aftercare, but I didn't get any of that aftercare for me. It took many years to overcome and understand what happened to me. And one of the main things that I'd like to point out that was part of that process was meeting other survivors around the country.
Holly Austin Smith, she's the author of Walking Prey, How America's Youth Are Vulnerable to Sex Slavery. Thank you so much for this important book and conversation.
Thank you.